Okay. So again, Be'etzem, we are in Melachim Aleph, Perek Tesvav. But again, we are going to learn it in the parallel sukkim of Divrei Hayamim Beis Tesvav. So let's just catch up a little bit, remind ourselves what we were up to. We saw that Asa introduced a new era, of intense dedication to Hashem. And Hashem awarded this with miraculous victories over some menacing neighbors, the Cushim, the Ethiopians. They had a smashing victory over them, even though they were highly outnumbered. And after this victory, it was followed up with Azaryahu, the Navi, coming and telling them, note that yes, this is Hashem noting, acknowledging, and rewarding your efforts. So keep it up, keep it up. So let's begin again from Divrei Hayamim Tesvav 15, Pasuk Ches, 8. Okay? So now, V'kishmoya Asa hadvarim ha'ele. When Asa heard these things, he heard the chizuk of the Navi, ha'nevuah Oded ha'Navi, and the nevuah that was given by Oded ha'Navi, was actually Azaryahu, the son of Oded, his chazek, it very much strengthened his resolve, and he took his pious energies further. Vayaavel hashikutzin. I hope you didn't get a malachim. We're doing the parallel Divrei Hayamim. Yeah. Okay. You want to? Well, wait a minute. You want to go get the? Okay. So he heard the Navi giving him this message from Hashem, this message of acknowledgement. So that spurred him to go even further. He's chazak, he put in intense efforts. As we discussed, his predecessors, Rechavam and Aviram, were not bad people either. And they were trying to keep the Torah and enforce the Torah, but the difference was that they weren't making initiatives to turn the clock back. Now, whatever had already started sprouting, any idolatry that already started sprouting in Eretz Yehuda, okay, kind of left for a certain status quo, but they were pushing the nation in a different direction. Asa came down and he said, no, we're going to turn the clock back. We're going to bring the state in Eretz Yisrael to the ultimate. And therefore he began a cleansing system. By Avi Hashikutzim, we call Eretz Yehuda Ol Binyamin. He eliminated all of the idols from Eretz Yehuda Ol Binyamin. And also from the cities that he had captured from Har Ephraim. Here, it's almost like there's a nuance. You have to chap here. The Navi is making a specific point, a significant point that wasn't even really elaborated on. He captured territory from Har Ephraim. Har Ephraim is the 10 tribes, right? So the Navi doesn't spell this out, but we're seeing here that he actually went to war against the 10 tribes. Because, as we discussed, the Rabban tells us that what was going on here, Asa was headed for really turning back the clock to the times of David and Shlomo. He was on his way to achieving the reunification of the nation. And because of his pious zeal, he wasn't just sufficing with cleansing the land of Yehuda, but he was actually going to war against the 10 tribes because of the fact that they were sunken in idolatry, the calves, etc. And he wanted to enforce the law of the Torah on them too. Okay? So, here we see, we're almost told like after the fact, that he had actually captured territory from Har Ephraim. Oh, he got a full ton out of it. Okay. No, I just want to make sure you didn't just get him a lock-in. I see you got the... Okay. We're in Divrei Hayamim Beis, Perek Tes Vav, Pasuk Tes. So, yes, he cleansed, he eliminated any of the idols from the territory of Yehuda and Yemen, and also from the 10 tribe territory that he had captured.
1969.
Oh, yeah, the same one. And he also renovated the Mizbeach of the Beit HaMikdash. And now he started taking things even further, right? He's on a campaign of bringing Klal Yisrael to the highest level they can be. So he gathered together all of Yehuda Binyamin, and also, here note, right? Also those who had joined them from Menashe, Ephraim, and Shimon, were noting historic pieces of information here, right? More and more of the 10 tribes are moving over into the rule of Asaph. Ki naflu alav miYisrael l'Raiv, because much of Israel of the 10 tribes had been defecting to him. When they saw that Hashem was with him, so he was really en route to bringing the 10 tribes back into the fold and turning the clock back and reunifying the nation and Hamish going back to the times of David and Shlomo. Now you come to Yerushalayim b'chodesh hashlishi, and they all gathered in Yerushalayim in the third month, the Shnat Chamesh Esrei l'Malchus Asa, the 15th year of the kingdom of Asa. Made a massive gathering of Klal Yisrael from all around Eretz Yehuda, all gathered together. They were going to have this massive assembly, right, to inspire everybody to take their efforts in Hashem's service to the next level. Vayizbechu l'Hashem b'yom ahu, and they sacrificed to Hashem on that day, min hashalom. Hey, view from the, what's that?
I was putting the word booty.
Yeah, the booty. Yeah, the booty that they had captured from where? From their wars with the 10 tribes. From their wars with Israel. Bakal shvamiyos, they bought 700 heads of cattle, with 7,000 sheep. And they made a covenant that they are all going to dedicate themselves to seeking out Hashem, taking up the efforts, stepping up their efforts of dedication to Hashem, with all their heart, with all their soul. Anyone who would not be a part of this campaign, who wouldn't dedicate himself to upping the standards, you must. He'd be put to death. As we noted last time, I believe, that this is such a concept that even though the person didn't necessarily do anything that would actually warrant the death penalty, here Asa is saying, we, the Jewish people, are upping our standards of Hashem's service to a higher level, a notch above. Anybody who doesn't want to be part of that, doesn't have a place in Klal Yisrael now, is going to be put to death. There is such a thing. First of all, okay, the king has the right to impose standards according to what he senses to be the where the nation is holding. But yes, a person who, it's not just an issue of keeping your nose clean halakhically, right? But when all Klal Yisrael is holding at a certain standard, and one person doesn't want to, even if we're not talking about doing Yisurim, that is considered a very cardinal crime. So, therefore he said, yes, anybody who's not going to join this campaign of upping our efforts, upping our standards, you must, will be put to death. L'min katoin v'ad godol, l'me'ish v'ad isha, whether it's someone little or someone big. Yet the Mefarshim say little doesn't mean a child. The child is not liable for these things, but it means whether an important or unimportant person. That's what it means. Man or woman. And this is not just for the elite. This is an all-encompassing campaign. Your chair? You okay? Vayishavu la'Hashem b'kol gadol u'b'tru'a u'b'chatzotzos u'b'shofaros. And they all, they made this formal shvua that everybody is taking an oath to be dedicated to Hashem's service. And they did it with a lot of fanfare, with cheering, and with trumpets and shofaros. So even though, right, Asa came along and imposed this on them, now anybody who isn't going to keep with this is going to be put to death, it wasn't like he was really forcing it on Klal Yisrael. This really reflected where Klal Yisrael is at. And they were all going along with this very enthusiastically. Vayismuchu kol Yehuda al Hashvua. On the contrary, they all greatly rejoiced with this oath. They were all enthusiastically dedicated to the cause. Ki b'chol levavam nishba'u. They made this oath with all their hearts. It wasn't just that they were being forced into it by Asa's threat. U'b'chol ritzoinam b'kshu. And they were all there to just try to get as close as Hashem. That was all they desired. Because they had been through the thrilling experience that this was what characterized the great times of old, of the first Beis Hamikdash, where they had experienced that by going out for Hashem, He responded in kind. They all experienced this on a national level. They were seeing the successes. You know, things have been dropping over the last couple of generations. Now that Asa drove them to these high, new heights, and they were seeing the back and forth, how they put in these efforts, and Hashem responded with a miraculous victory. Now, that victory itself is something, you know, you might sense that it's a response to Hashem, you might not, but Hashem underscored it with an explicit message from the Navi. I'm right here with you, that was me who did that. This injected them with an enthusiasm to double their efforts. And when they doubled those efforts, they saw even more success. This system of the give and take with Hashem was something that, this was the bliss of living in the times of Nevuah. And it made them drunk with enthusiasm. And therefore, they were all head over heels to be a part of this campaign. It was almost like another Nasim and Ishma. Right? After seeing, after experiencing that give and take with Hashem, these dynamics, yes, Asa came and told them anybody who doesn't will be put to death, but that wasn't needed. They were all there ready to do it all the way. What else? Asa took another bold step. The Gamacha Eim Asa HaMelech. Macha, the grandmother of Asa, remember her? This was a woman of not great reputation. Hesira Migvira. He took her away from being the mother queen, as I call the mother queen, right? Queen mother. The queen mother. Asher Osasala Asherah Mifletzes, if you remember, she had actually made a Mifletzes. Remember, we saw different understandings of exactly what that was. It was either a monstrous idol, or it was actually a temple for idolatry. Whatever it is, it was some sort of big idolatry related something. What's that? She made it for the Asherah. For the Asherah.
What's the Shoresh? Palets?
What's that? Yeah, Palets. So the in modern Hebrew, Mifletzes is a monster. Because Palets, that Shoresh is fright. Fright, a monster. It's frightening. Right? So, presumably that's how they're understanding it here. But the Mephoshim say that presumably the reason the term Mephoshim is being used for whatever issue was using is not because it itself was so frightening, but because of the fact that it caused fright to its worshippers by the fact that it brought all kinds of tzaras on them. Okay, like the same way we call Avodah Zarah Gilulin, like we have all kinds of opposite terms for that. So the truth is, you have to realize that this was a bold step to take, because okay, fine, she was an old lady, also she could do anything then, but the prestige of the kingdom very, very much rode on, you know, the prestige of the whole family. If there was a, let's say, mother queen or queen mother, what do you mean? Queen mother. If there was a queen mother, that was an important part of the prestige of the royal house. By him coming and tearing down his grandmother like that, that could have been a blow to the prestige of his kingship. But this was his dedication. Vayichos ases miflatzto. He cut down her miflatzes. Vayodek, he ground it up. Vayisoy, he burnt it. Vinachal kidron, and then he scattered it in the creek of Kidron.
What's the title?
Yeah. V'abama Yisroel Sarum Yisroel. What was the one thing? The one thing was that the private bamas, the private altars, the backyard mizbeches, those were still there. Meaning these were not altars for Avodah Zarah. But at this point in time, when the world was a Beis HaMikdash, a private altar was illegal. You weren't allowed to have a private altar in your backyard. This was the one thing that either he didn't manage or he just didn't eliminate. People were so used to that. It was very hard to get away with this, and he decided to pick his battles. That he left, that was the one qualification of the perfect state that he brought Klal Yisrael to. And relative to, you know, idolatry, etc., this wasn't bad.
Was it a place to go back north if he didn't know?
So some of the Mefarshim say that he was worried about, look, the lure of Avodah Zarah is so... always on the horizon, always right there. Let's at least let them have this so they won't go to other things.
I mean, more because of the inconvenience.
The reason they wanted to have these backyard altars was for inconvenience, right. He was worried that if he's not going to enable them this form of worship at their convenience, they'll go to other things, right? If you remember that in the 10 tribes, Yehovah went to great lengths to make it very convenient and comfortable to come to his temples, etc. So that he didn't manage to get rid of. Nevertheless, Rak Levav Asa Haya Shalim Kal Yomov. But Lamaisa.
Today, did the Rabbanim also have those kind of like leeways where they let something, but they don't let something?
No, this is a criticism. There's no such thing. A Torah authority does not have the right to make compromises on behalf of the Torah. Meaning, when you're talking about Isser and Heter, right? There's the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, where he was once trying to influence a certain storekeeper to close up the Shabbos. And the Chafetz Chaim did his thing. It was very hard to resist the Chafetz Chaim's... he knew how to talk to people. And finally the fellow told him, okay, Rebbe, I'm ready to close up the Shabbos. But, he said, I have to get it in order. It'll take me a couple of weeks. Give it 4 more weeks, whatever it is he said, a certain amount of time, and then I'm going to close. Just have to make it balance out. Chafetz Chaim said to him, listen, if I was the Baal HaBayis, I'd give you half a year. He said, but Shabbos doesn't belong to me.
But
Shabbos doesn't belong to me. Hashem didn't give me a license to negotiate on his behalf. So this is a very important principle, because sometimes there is a certain feeling of, you know, let's give a little. We don't have the right to give. We're not licensed to do that, right? What you have to do, you have to do, right? But sometimes, you know, people who are in these sorts of positions will be, they might not emphasize something, they might word it in certain ways, but to actually go and tell a person, I let you do this, right? So that it'll be easier for you. We'll say, A, the rule is that we don't have the right to do that. What happens in situations where you have to come up with a case-by-case solution when you're faced with these sorts of problems. But whatever it is, it's certainly not the rule. It's possible, though, that Asa didn't actually sanction it. All he did was not fight it. He knew to cut his losses.
There's a pasuk in the Chumash a few weeks ago or last week where it said that, you know, we should destroy all of the Avodah Zarah temples and so on. So I was thinking of, like, Yerushalayim, like, why aren't we actively, why aren't we destroying, or not destroying, why aren't the building, why aren't we, like, suggesting, maybe not allowed, maybe...
Why don't we get rid of all the churches and temples in Eretz Yisrael? That's your question.
Basically, that's exactly the question. Yeah, and it was in the Chumash. It was right there in the Chumash.
Know why? Because the police won't let us. The police will go there with clubs and they'll block us. That's why. Now, why don't the police do it? That's a good question. Really, the police should do it. It's the job of the IDF and the police. But you know what? The true reason for that is they can't do it either. because they'll have the whole world up against them in arms. And you know what that reflects? It reflects the fact that today we're still in Golos. That's really what it is. Yeah, that's really the bottom line. It's true. It's true. One of the prerequisites of really being in the ultimate state is the ability to go ahead and do that, to get rid of every last church, temple, and all kinds of churches. Reformed temples, conservative synagogues. You got to get rid of all the churches. Right? And that is the ability to do that and to actually go ahead and do it. Yep. Yep. It should be done. Now, even that, when I say it should be done, if the foya, if in reality, you know, Netanyahu would show up here and say, okay, Jacobson, so should I go and do it? I don't know. See, again, this reality of being in Golos is a serious reality, right? It's something we just can't afford to do that now because it's dangerous for Klal Yisrael, which is, once again, you know, as long as we're in Golos, we don't have these means. So the bottom line is that, yes, the Jewish people being in their ultimate state, in the ideal state, one of the prerequisites is going ahead and doing that. But we can't.
So this team maybe should have gone into every backyard and destroyed. He could have gotten away with it.
So it's possible that he could have, or it's possible that maybe he felt that no, it would have just backfired.
So you think you have to sometimes draw the line.
In terms of enforcing, right. But not in terms of sanctioning. He wouldn't have had the right to say it's okay. That's our point. We wouldn't have had the right to say it's okay. We don't have the right to negotiate on behalf of the church. Something is also it's us. Now, perhaps you just turned a blind eye, and that's sometimes you do need to know when to do that. I was very tantalizing situation. It was a real big tease. One time I was walking behind Abba Yoshin when there was a big queue of person talking to him, and he asked if he's allowed to tell a person not to keep Shabbos entirely yet because he feared it would be too fast a step for the person to take. Right? And I heard the question being asked and I missed the answer. Okay.
Same answer.
What's that? I missed the answer. It was a big tease. I didn't hear what he actually said.
Also, the concept of
there is such a thing, but that's like for the greatest of the great to decide. Is that what Asa did here? Maybe. Right, so again, there's a difference between turning a blind eye is something that there is license for when, you know, that's what good judgment says to do. Right? They've fallen for these things. But to sanction it would already be a whole different story. So to actually say it's okay. But there's a difference between turning a blind eye and saying something is okay. Okay.
Okay.
But despite the fact that these bamas, the altars, are still there, Asa's heart was where it needed to be, meaning there's no criticism on Asa. Asa's heart was where it was supposed to be, wholeheartedly dedicated to Hashem all of his days. And here also we make another stress. Once again, with the existence of the altars notwithstanding, Vayove, Asa himself, Vayove is Kodshei Avi the Kadosha Beis HaLekin. He made a point of bringing anything that he or his father had consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash. As far as he was concerned, he only recognizes the service of the Beis HaMikdash. He personally is not recognizing private worship, right? Kesef, Vizav, the Kalim, his gold, silver, different utensils. And he enjoyed great tranquility. There were no wars until 35 years into the kingship of Asa. Presumably, no wars means no threatening wars. Meaning we saw that he invaded Israel. But the kingship, we mean no threatening wars. Now, that 35 years. Everything is beautiful. Bishnas 36 v'malchus Asa. year 36 of the kingship of Atza, Halo Basha Melech Yisrael al Yehuda. Basha, the king of the 10 tribes, came up against Yehuda. You remember, Basha already had an account with Asa. Asa had already given him a beating earlier on. And now Basha is coming to fight Asa. What's that? He wants to. Let's see. Oh, suppose he didn't manage to completely. He made advances into their territory, got as far as he could get. Then Basha, the king of Israel, came up against Yehuda. Vayiven es haraman, he built a great blockade. Vevilti teisyotze vavala asa melech Yehuda. Not to allow, he made a big siege, not to allow anybody to get in or out from where Asa was. So now, let's understand what's going on here. First of all, I just want to note something. We're coming to a certain peak here. The Mefarshim point out, say the Elam already points out, it says that this took place in the 36th year of Malchus Asa. Basha came up against Asa. The problem is that Basha died in year number 26 of Asa's reign.
Where do we see that?
Problem. What's that?
Where do we see that?
That comes out of the Psukim when you make the Cheshbonos.
Okay.
I'm never good at keeping track of that.
Okay.
So the Mefarshim say, and the Rambag really gives the full significance of this, the Chazal already say it, but the Rambag gives the full significance that 35 years is not counting really 35 years to Asa's reign per se. It's counting 35 years to the split of the kingdom, to the split between Yehuda and Binyamin. That's what Chazal say. That's all. Why exactly here did we decide to give this count? Is that, you want to say something?
So it was only 9 years?
What's that?
Asa came to power 9 years after the split?
Asa came to power 9-10 years after the split. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So 36 years, that was the length of time that Solomon was married to the boy from Power's Up. That was
Hashem's original plan. That's why it was 36 years. Good. No. Paro's daughter. So, okay, right. So let's put the plot here together. The Rambag is the one who really works it all out. He says like this: as we were sitting here, Asa is leading the Jewish people to higher heights, and where it was headed towards was reunifying the Jewish people and ending the split. Okay, and like you said, originally that's the plan, was that it would be for 36 years and then be brought back. So almost like in a certain sense headed for messianic times, right? But here the way Hashem operates is a person grows great, Hashem ups the bar a bit. Hashem wants push a little further, see, are you going to get all the way there in order for this to happen? And therefore we're counting here to year number 35 in the split, because the significance here was, is this going to be the last year of the split or not? So what happened? So this was the big test. This was really, everything that had been going on up till now is now culminating with the big test for Asa. And Asa tragically failed the test. Basha comes up against him, lays siege to Yerushalayim. What did Asa do? Vayoytzei Asa kesef v'zav me'oytzois beis Hashem v'beis HaMelech. Asa emptied out the gold and silver from the treasuries of the Beis HaMikdash and of the royal treasuries. Vayishlach el ben Hadad melech Aram, and he sent to ben Hadad, the king of Aram, Hayeshev v'Darmesek, who was living in Darmesek, Lema, saying, Bris beini uveinecha uveinavi uveinavicha. There's a covenant between me and you, between our fathers. Hine shalachti lechal kesev izav. Here, look at all this gold and silver. Now, lech hafer brischa es basha melech Yisrael. Bail me out. Go back on your covenant with Basha. Get him off my back. Get him away from me. Vayishma ben Hadad el HaMelech Asa. So Ben Hadad listens to Asa. Vayishlach esorei chayalim ashaloi. He sent his officers out, sent his army out, El Ari Yisrael, to the cities of Israel, the 10 tribes. And Basha is busy with an offensive against Asa. So at this time, Ben Hadad sends his army to attack the territory of the 10 tribes. All of a sudden, Basha has a headache on his head. He can't afford to just be sitting and besieging Yehuda.
Asa really didn't ask King of Aram to attack Basha. He just asked him to stay neutral.
He asked him.
And then the king on his own took care of his head.
I didn't see that. I hear. Oh yeah, they bring that down. Aha! I hear. That's a new take. I didn't know that. It seems that the simple understanding is that. Oh, okay. Let's see. Yeah.
I'm talking about.
Right. Okay. Let's see.
Why is this a kiddush? The simple read of the pasuk is all he asked him was hafer brisecha.
No, the alem eloi. Yeah, let him go away from
him.
Right. The Alem Eloi seems to indicate that he's telling him, get him away from him.
Ah, got it.
Right.
He tells him, he says, I know your treaty with Asa.
Right.
So he's not telling him to attack.
Oh, but then he continues and he says,
but he knew that if the king of Aram would stay neutral, that he could defeat Baasha.
Oh, okay. You know what? Even with what you're saying, it's interesting. I didn't see the Mefarshim that say that, but even with what you're saying, the points will still be the same, as we'll see. Because at the end of the day, what Hashem, you know, let's not jump the gun. Let's see in another minute or two. Let's see. We didn't get there yet. Let's see. No, we did get there, but not fully yet. Let's see. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is, Ben Hadad comes, Vayaku es Ioin, there's Don, there's Ovel Mayim, there's Komis Kenoi Soin Aftori. He came and he started wreaking havoc in the territory of the 10 tribes, destroyed all these different cities, and a bunch of cities in Naphtali. Vayihi, Kishmaya Basha. Basha heard about this, Vayechdal Mibnoises Harama. He couldn't afford anymore to be busy with the siege. He stopped building this blockade, maintaining this blockade. He just dropped the campaign, went back home. Fell between his legs. So Asa managed to deflect the threat. But here he failed. Did he do anything wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. But the thing here was that, as we were seeing, there was a system here, and this is so common of the way Hashem operates with the great leaders of Klal Yisrael. Higher causes higher expectations. Higher expectations. Hashem is pushing the person. A little higher, a little higher, a little higher. Asa was doing well. What was Hashem expecting here? What Hashem was expecting here was a very common pattern. That if I demonstrate my presence with you, I want you to put a little more eggs in my basket. And more eggs in my basket. And more eggs in my basket. Meaning, more and more to be able to rely on me, sense my presence, live with it, and make it a part of your reality. Hashem was expecting Asa to already be at a place where he had already seen so much of that give and take with Hashem, especially after the smashing victory against the Ethiopians, that Asa should be able to say, I have absolutely no fear, I don't need to. Again, what did he do? And for one of us, it wouldn't have been a crime to empty the treasuries of the royal house and the Beis HaMikdash. It would have been a treasure even. That would have been a crime even to save the Jewish people. But Asa was already at a place where Hashem was expecting him to say, I've seen that Hashem is with me. I don't have to worry. I don't need to involve Ben Hadad. I'll be fine, Hashem will be here, very much as others of the great kings did. It's always unfair to contrast people with David HaMelech, but that's what characterized David HaMelech's wars. That's what characterized Hizkiyahu's wars. This was the bar that Hashem expected of his greatest leaders, and Asa came almost, but not quite. No, that was not the problem. That was not the problem. The problem was that he didn't feel confident enough in Hashem's help to take on Basha by himself. That was the problem.
But also he called the Goyim to help hurt his brother.
That's self-defense. That's self-defense. That wouldn't have been held against him.
Was it Jehoiakim? Who was the king who said, I'm not going to allow Egypt to cross me?
That was Yeshayahu.
I'm not allowed that. I'm not going to allow them to cross, with the sword, because that's not going to be allowed. But he failed because there's still what is there going on. So maybe in defense of Asa, maybe you could say he realized he still has these problems with the Bamos. He's not going to have that Heshkacha process to. So he had to do something else. He had to.
I have a question. I was thinking something about that. I mean, that's true. But if you see that case, there's a Nabi come from Shimon HaMelech and told him, you're not ready for this, right? But here also, we still have the Nevi'im, we have the Ummah to me, and they will just go and say, didn't you consult the Ummah to me? Didn't you have like another to tell them, this is the Ratzon Hashem, this is not the Ratzon Hashem? Well,
okay.
What's sort of giving direct input?
Okay, so we have to understand something. Yeah, so first of all, yeah, but in the case of Yeshayahu, the problem was that, yeah, he had gotten the word of Yirmiyahu. Told him don't do it. That was very puzzling. It's not even puzzling for us to ever understand. How does the person defy the word of another? Okay, that was, in the reality of living with Nevi'im, apparently there could be such a reality. Okay, now, but coming back here, the question that you're asking, the simpler question to address is the point that you're raising. What's with the Urim, the Tumim, etc.? So, yes, there were Urim, the Tumim, and there were Nevi'im, but they did not always provide the answers. It's important to realize this. Often, the challenge of the king was to be able to use his discretion. And even when consulting, it could be that he had different takes on it, etc. At the end of the day, the bottom line responsibility lay with him. And part of the advice of the king was, Hashem set things up. Sometimes, the answer was with the Urim, the Tumim. Sometimes, instructions were given by a Navi. Sometimes it was up to the king to use the best of his ability to reach the right decisions. You see that with David HaMelech also. There were instances, I'm trying to remember now what the example was. You asked the question at the time. I forgot what it was, where David HaMelech had to make a call. I forgot what it was now. But David HaMelech had to make a call. It was a tough call. And he made the call. And I think you asked at the time, why didn't he consult with Urim and Thummim? It's all the same principle. Yes, the Urim and Thummim was there, and the king was expected to consult with it when he could, but not all answers were provided by the Urim and Thummim. Part of the avoid of the king was to make these calls himself. How did it work? When yes, when not? Hashem had an individual recipe for every case. And part of our avoid with Hashem is dealing with the challenges that Hashem sends us as he sends them, and using whatever tools we have to deal with them. Sometimes Hashem gives some tools, sometimes other tools, sometimes more tools, sometimes less tools.
Why was Basha starting out with this successful?
Basha felt threatened by him and also was resentful. He had already taken some of his territory. Basha saw that he felt that he had an opportunity to attack him. He went for it. You don't have to explain Basha too much. He's operating on material terms, right? Whatever. However, we'll explain why the Ethiopians decided to attack. That's why Basha decided to attack also. So a window of opportunity. Now, and this really brings us to the point that you're raising. You're getting into the ins and outs of what made each king decide what, right? So, of course, we're going with the given that if a person used the best of his abilities to make the decisions with all the Torah discretion he has, he's not going to be held responsible. That's called making the right decision. Okay? When a person faces a dilemma, he's meant to use his limited human capacity to make a decision. Now, limited human capacity does include saying, can I get an answer from you or to me? Are there sages I can consult with, etc.? But ultimately, you have whatever is at your disposal. The problem here was that it was not just a seichelvik decision of this is what I think the situation wants. There was an element of panic here. There was an element of panic. There was an element of not feeling confident enough. And the truth is, that is very, very much the test for people like this. The truth is, that's also what Hashem accuses the people in the Dor HaMidbar of. The ability to be able to, after you've seen Hashem come through for you again and again and again, to what extent? That's already Hashem has an account of each individual, but Hashem already has an expectation. Be ready to let go of more and rely on me. Be ready to let go of more and rely on me. Here, Asa failed in his ability to do it. There was that certain sense of, I still have to have my material security. I still have to feel like my feet are on solid ground. After I have Ben Hadad behind me, then I can have Yitzchak. Hashem said, no. Where you're holding now, you should be able to take that step forward and be able to have that full Yitzchak. It's like Shlomo Brevda said, right? When Bush Sr. went to war against Iraq, right? So the night before, in his speech where he talked about Hashem helping and everything, so Shlomo Brevda said, after he was sure he had enough bombs from here to reach Gehenna, he was able to decide to go to war against Iraq, and then he could afford to say, you know, we rely on God okay, you know what? For him, fair enough. But the point here is that Hashem had already brought Asa to the threshold of being able to take that leap of faith. We don't say blind faith, not a leap of blind faith. A leap of educated faith to say, you know what? With the closeness that Hashem is showing me now, I don't need this. I don't need the assistance. I do not need to empty the coffers of the Beis HaMikdash. I'll be fine like this. Seems that way. Okay. So now, but that never really concerned kings of Damascus from then till today. It was never a major object. Okay. That's always a tough toss-up. Meaning, in general, the rule is that yes. If you can do things in natural means, yes. But there's two qualifications. One qualification, which is relevant to all of us, is the question is, at what cost? Here, at the end of the day, it also involved emptying the coffers of the Beis HaMikdash. And that was done. It's just money. That's true. But whether you should take that step or not depends on how confident do you feel that you'll be okay. Meaning, the reason he made that decision was not just cold logic, but it was because of that certain element of panic that shouldn't have been there. And but the second qualification is, and this is something that's more relevant to him than to us, is that even that, what do you consider natural means, etc., should depend on a person's experience with Hashem. A person who has been experiencing Hashem intervening in his life in a very open way to the extent that he can already rely on X, Y, Z because Hashem does it for him all the time, is already expected to say, there, I'm just factoring Hashem. What's that? Exactly, that's right. When a person has that experience, Hashem provides the person with the privilege of that experience with the expectation that you're supposed to work that into your consciousness as a part of your reality. And that was the big challenge here, right? That's what Hashem blames the people in the Midbar of what? They tested me these 10 times. These weren't individual sins. It was really the same theme threading all the sins. Hayesh Hashem b'kir beinu imayin. It was always a certain sense of, do we really have Hashem with us or do we not? Right? With the Meraglim, right? if you know, a few of the different incidents in the Midbar was that same thing. Hashem is showing them, but at the end of the day, every time it came down to it, are they just going to completely put their eggs in Hashem's basket? Or in this case, I need to feel like I have some sort of material crutch before I can completely rely on Hashem. In those great days, much more than today, Hashem did expect people to take this step. Hashem showed them enough of His presence so as to be able to expect from them to take that greater step and to put more faith in Him and thereby, so to speak, enable Him to come through for them in even greater ways. Hashem said, as you're going to see soon, the Navi is going to tell him, I would have come through for you miraculously. Were they any more mighty than the Ethiopians? You already saw me come step in for you there. I would have come through for you in a most spectacular way. Right? And yes, he had already experienced enough. This is really the fine point here. Because the question that you're asking and the nuschais of using natural means, etc., are more relevant to us than to a person who's really experienced Hashem in a sensory way in his life, time after time. A person who does is supposed to be upping his bar in terms of what does he consider the natural means that he should be relying on. What's that? I don't know. I don't know how to explain it in each case. Avoiding war is a different story. Avoiding war is a different story because you don't have to look for war. Here he was facing war whether he liked it or not. Yeah, he was facing war whether he liked it or not. I don't know. I don't know how to explain each case. But I'll say, for example, that's a chat of Chanina ben Doisa. Rav Chanina ben Doisa. This is the famous story of Chanina ben Doisa where his daughter lit vinegar instead of olive oil. And he said, so what are you upset about? Who makes olive oil burn? Who makes vinegar burn also? What's the pshat of Chanina ben Doisa, right? What's the pshat in that? We don't operate that way. The pshat in that is that Rav Chanina ben Doisa was living at a level where he really had experienced enough of Hashem's open intervention in his life that he slowly started shifting the way he viewed everything in life from natural over to Hashem's providence. To the extent that when he saw olive oil burning, he didn't see a natural process. He saw a divine process, which is really how we should work towards seeing everything, right? If you see your body do their functions in a normal way, you shouldn't see a natural process, you should see a divine process. He got so used to thinking in these terms that when he lit olive oil, he saw Hashem at work. So as far as he was concerned, there was absolutely no reason for the same thing not to happen with vinegar. So that's it. That's the fine point here. The fine point here is that yes, we work with natural means. But you want Hashem to become more and more of a natural reality, and the more Hashem shows himself to you, he expects you to be doing that. And that's where Asa failed. He was already holding it, being able to be doing that, but no, he had to back up and have his solid material ground before he could put too much eggs in Hashem's basket. And that was where he failed lefi his great level. Yeah, did he commit a crime here? Was there a sin here? No. But Hashem had a certain expectation for him. Hashem put a certain bar for him, and he failed, didn't rise to the challenge. To you.
I'm not ready. Turn it off.
Oh, finished?
Just now.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay. Okay. Thank you.